Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 38, and it's June 22nd, 2020. Revising prose differs from other texts. Let me emphasize these differences up front. One, about revising. True to its title, it's about revising. It does not deal with original composition. People often argue that writing cannot be taught, and if they mean that inspiration cannot be commanded nor laziness banished, then of course they are right. But stylistic analysis, revision, is something else. A method, not a mystical rite. How we compose, pray for the muse, marshal our thoughts, find willpower to glue backside to chair, these may be idiosyncratic. But revision belongs to the public domain. Anyone can learn it. In colleges and universities, revising is more common nowadays than it was when this book first appeared. Computers have made it much easier to do. Still, except in composition classes, instructors seldom require it or help students revise on their own. Nothing would improve student writing more than steady, detailed revision. But such revision is difficult to do, especially without guidance. The process deserves a book to itself. That's what revising prose tries to be. In the workplace to which school leads, revision usually poses more problems than original composition. At work, the student's dilemma, what to write about, hardly exists. The facts are there, the needs press hard, the arguments lie ready to hand. The deadline impends. The first draft assembles itself from the external pressures. You bat it out on a crowded plane, flying back home from a meeting. Or you start with the draft a colleague has batted out. Then the sweat really begins. Revision, commonly done in group settings. For more organizational writing, collective revision up through a hierarchy determines the final text. All writing is rewriting, goes the cliche. Okay, here's the book for it. It offers a collective writing philosophy which a group can easily and quickly learn to share. 2, translates the official style into English. A specific analytical and social premise informs revising prose. Much bad writing today comes not from the conventional sources of verbal dereliction, sloth, ignorance, or native absence of mind, but from stylistic imitation. It is learned, an act of stylistic piety which imitates a single style, the bureaucratic style, I have called the official style. This bureaucratic style dominates written discourse in our time, and beginning or harried or fearful writers adopt it as a protective coloration. So common a writing pattern deserves a separate focus, a book of its own. Revising prose is about revising the official style into plain English. There are signs that the official style may be going out of style. The Securities and Exchange Commission has started requiring that initial public offerings and new companies be written in a plain style. President Clinton has even issued an executive order in June 1998 requiring that federal agencies communicate in writing that is clearer and easier to understand. Maybe this miracle will come to pass, but don't expect every personal flotation device to turn back into a life jacket overnight. If you're a bureaucrat who wants to take the new executive order to heart, though, revising prose is just the book for you. 3. Rule-based and self-teaching. Revising prose was written to be a supplementary text for any course or task that required writing. The pressures of school or workplace rarely permit time off to take a special writing course. You need something useful right then. Again, a special book for this purpose seems justified. Because it addresses a single discrete style, revising prose can be rule-based to a degree which prose analysis rarely permits. This set of rules, the paramedic method, in turn allows the book to be self-teaching. 4. Useful in all jobs. Because the official style dominates university, workplace, and government alike, revising prose can work in all these contexts. Readers of earlier editions have sometimes asked me whether revising prose addresses students or teachers. It addresses the revising self in all of us, students, teachers, and all other workers in the world. all other workers in the word. That revising self is neither the writing self nor the reading self, but a third one, which uneasily combines both. Scholars who study children's language have argued that language understanding and language using evolve as separate systems, which only later combine into full language competence. Revising tries to hold these two different powers, two different selves, in mind at once. That's what makes it so hard. In my experience, the land of revision is an egalitarian place where pedagogical authority gives way to common perplexity. Thus, revising prose addresses an audience including students and teachers, but not restricted to them. Used as directed, the paramedic method works for anybody. 5. Addresses the electronic word. If writing on electronic screen has revolutionized prose composition and prose style, nowhere has the revolution hit harder than in revision. Revision is much easier to do on screen. More of it is being done, and done in many new ways. Electronic text brings with it a new stylistic theory, as well as a new means of moving words around on an expressive surface. The fourth edition of Revising Prose provides a beginner's guide to both theory and practice. 6. Saves time and money when used as directed. The bottom line for the workplace, the paramedic method, when used as directed, saves time and money. Lots of it. Word processing time, fax time, duplicating time, file space, above all, reading time. The lard factor of the official style usually runs about 50%, and eliminating it generates equivalent savings in all these areas. The bottom line for students, you can say twice as much in the space allotted to you and therefore get a better grade. When an instructor is plowing through a batch of papers at 2 a.m, a well-written, powerful train of thought shines out like the Holy Grail. And student time is money too. So times 10 is time in the workplace. The bottom line, there is big savings in the whole communications chain. But the book has an even larger efficiency in view, stylistic self-consciousness. This verbal self-awareness, however generated, is like riding a bicycle. Once learned, never forgotten. And stylistic self-consciousness changes how we read and write, not only in a single bureaucratic register, but across the board. From a particular focus, this book aims to teach a general skill with words and to suggest that such a skill has moral implications. Implications dealt with in the last chapter, Why Bother? 7. Sentence-based. The last and the most important point. Revising prose focuses on the single sentence. Get the basic architecture of the English sentence straight, I think, and everything else will follow. Transposed up an octave toward generality, this book might have been called The English Sentence. We're analyzing in this book the microeconomics of prose. All our work together will be close focus writing and what acousticians call near field listening. Acousticians, yeah. Sorry, a little reading trouble here. All our work together will be close focus writing and what acousticians call near field listening. Such close focus work is as seldom performed as it is universally needed. We spend a great deal of time worrying about our verbal P's and Q's that we ought to spend worrying about our sentence architecture. That's where the big misunderstandings occur. I've called my basic procedure for a revision, the paramedic method, because it provides emergency therapy, a first aid kit, a quick self-teaching method of revision for people who want to translate the official style, their own or someone else's, into plain English. But it is only that, a first aid kit. It's not the art of medicine. As with paramedicine in underdeveloped countries, it does not attempt to teach a full body of knowledge, but only to diagnose and cure the epidemic disease. It won't answer, though, at the end it addresses, the big question, having the cure, how do you know when or if you should take it? For this, you need the full art of prose medicine, a mature and reflective training and verbal self-awareness. I've addressed this larger stylistic domain in another book, Analyzing Prose. To get the most out of revising prose, follow the paramedic method. It works only if you follow it rather than argue with it. When it tells you to get rid of the prepositional phrases, get rid of them. Don't go into a, but, well, in this case, given my style, really I need to bob and weave. You'll never learn anything that way. The PM constitutes the center of this book. Use it. It is printed on a separate page in the front. Clip it out and tack it above your desk for easy reference. Revising Prose has now been out in the world for 2 decades. Readers will want to know what is new in the fourth edition. Chapters 1 to 3 have been rewritten. Chapter 4 is new. I've revised the last 2 chapters as the changing times have required. And then he actually gives instructions to mail a letter or a phone, place a phone call or email him at AOL.com email address to order a book. Of course, these days you can just get it from 900 places online. A word about the last 2 items. Prose revision is an interactive process par excellence, best demonstrated and practiced dynamically, but the print medium, this book, can only describe it 1 step at a time. The interactive exercises allow you to try out, view on screen, various possibilities as you revise. The video shows revision as it happens. In case you've forgotten what active and passive or even noun and verb mean, I've provided an appendix which defines the grammatical and rhetorical terms used in the text. In this book, as in all my work, the editorial and scholarly eye of my wife, Carol Dana Lanham, has spared both reader and author many inconsistencies, gaffes, and stupidities. Gratias Ago, R-A-L. That's right, Richard Lanham. And here is the paramedic method, in short. 1. Circle the prepositions. 2. Circle the is forms. 3. Ask, where's the action? Who's kicking who? Does say who's kicking whom. 4. Put this kicking action in a simple, not compound active verb. 5. Start fast, no slow windups. 6. Write out each sentence on a blank screen or sheet of paper and mark off its basic rhythmic units with a carriage return. Mark off sentence links in the passage with a big carriage return between sentences. Read the passage aloud with emphasis and feeling. That's it. 8 steps. And I'll give you a taste for it. It's really great stuff. This is chapter 1, action. Since we all live in a bureaucracy these days, it's not surprising that we end up writing like bureaucrats. Nobody feels comfortable writing simply, Bill loves Marge. The system requires something like, a romantic relationship is ongoing between Bill and Marge. Or, Bill and Marge are currently implementing an interactive romantic relationship. Or still better, one can easily see that an interactive romantic relationship is currently being fulfilled between Bill and Marge. Ridiculous contrived examples? Here are some real ones. A businessman denied a loan does not suffer, but instead says, I went through a suffering process. A teacher does not say, if you use a calculator in class, you will never learn to add and subtract. But instead, the fact is that the use of the calculator in the classroom is negative for the learning process. An undergraduate wants to say that every UCLA freshman needs to learn how to cope with crowds, but it comes out as there can be little doubt that contending with the problem of overpopulation at UCLA is one thing that every freshman needs to learn how to do. Instead of being invited to recruit, a corporation is asked to participate in the recruitment process. A university bureaucrat wants to make a generous offer. To encourage broadband system use, the ACAD will pay all line charges for the next 2 years, but instead it comes out as, in order to stimulate utilization of the broadband system, it is the intention of the ACAD to provide for the central funding of all monthly line charges generated by attachment to the system over the period of the next 2 years. A politician indicates his reluctance to accept the terms on which this proposal was offered when he might have said, no. A teacher of business writing tells us not that people entering business today must learn to speak effectively, but one of these factors is the seemingly increasing awareness of the idea that to succeed in business, it is imperative that the young person entering a business career possess definite skill in oral communication. All these people write and maybe even think in the official style. The official style comes in many dialects: government, military, social scientific, lab scientific, MBA, flapdoodle. But all exhibit the same basic attributes. They all build on the same imbalance, a dominance of nouns and an atrophy of verbs. They enshrine the triumph, worshipped in every bureaucracy, of stasis over action. Real actions lurk furtively in each of the sentences I've just quoted. Suffer, learn, cope, recruit, pay, speak. But they are swamped by lame is verbs, shun words, facilitation, intention, and strings of prepositional phrases. This basic imbalance between action and inertia is easy to cure if you want to cure it, and this book's paramedic paramedic method teaches you how to do it. But when you do want to cure it, when do you want to cure it? We all sometimes feel, whatever setting we write in, that we will be penalized for writing in plain English. It will sound too flip, unserious, even satirical. In my academic dialect, that of literary study, writing plain English nowadays is tantamount to walking down the hall naked as a jaybird. Public places demand protective coloration. Sometimes you must write in the official style. And when you do, how do you make sure you are writing a good official style, if there is one, rather than a bad one? What can good and bad mean when applied to prose in this way? Revising prose starts out by teaching you how to revise the official style. But after you've learned that, we'll reflect on what such revision is likely to do for you or to you in the bureaucratic world of the future. And the future is only going to get more bureaucratic, how many efforts we make to simplify it and its official language. You ought then to be able to see what good and bad mean for prose and what you are doing when you revise it. And that means you'll know how to socialize your revisory talents, how to put them, like your sentences, into action. I'll stop there. It's a great book. I'd love to read the whole book. The sections after chapter one is action. Then there's shape, voice, scotuson, electronic literacy, why bother, and an appendix of terms. And the appendix of terms reminds me of this other great reference, the Plain English Handbook, I think it's called. I got it in the seventh grade, public school, and we were fortunate enough still then. I have a younger brother. By the time he got there, there was just English class. When I was in the seventh grade, we had an hour of English and an hour of grammar every day. And our two teachers colluded, absolutely. They were in league with each other, against us, and actually, truly, for us. They were severe with all the stories you hear about schools these days and grades, grade inflation, and these kinds of things. These two were severe. If you, in anything you turned in as homework or writing assignment for Mrs. Reynolds and Mr. Bledsoe, if it had a run-on sentence, a sentence fragment, if you misspelled a word, the highest grade you could attain was a 59, and they started deducting from there, period, the end. And if you made everything was handwritten, turned in on paper, we had these little, little folders. So you put your assignment dutifully in the folder. Everything had to be double spaced. And every single mistake you made, you could only write on the front of the page, by the way. And every mistake that you made, they handed your little folder back to you, and they marked off all your mistakes. And we were required to correct each and every mistake in red on the preceding page, the back of the preceding page in this folder, on exactly and precisely the same line. If you got off by one line, it didn't count. And so we had to correct every mistake we ever made, and there were a category of mistakes that if you made them, they simply weren't allowed. If you made them, it just crushed your grade. And I will say that at 13 years old, for all of us, they locked in decent writing. And as many would say, you know, writing is thinking. It sort of comes up in here in this preface to revising prose. And writing is thinking. And it's so interesting sometimes. You think you have something straight in your head, and if you want to test that, though, start writing it out. And if you can't write it clearly, that shows that your thinking is still muddled on whatever topic that might be. I brought up in some earlier dispatch here my love of the scene in The Right Stuff, where they're in the selection course for who gets to be the first astronauts. And one of the tests, they sit in front of this contraption where their job is to blow into a tube. And in so doing, this ping pong ball rises up in the tube, and there are two bars written on that tube right in front of each person. And so you have to exert sufficient sort of air pressure to hold that ping pong ball suspended between the two bars. And it reminds me, I love that as an analogy of any topic and you might be discussing, from Austin Transit to macroeconomic policy, any kind of historical thing, that if we were all challenged to actually cleanly state clear facts only, oh, okay, you have a very strong opinion about this $10 billion transit package upcoming. Great. Tell me everything you know about it and talk only in clear and well-stated facts. I think we would all tap out pretty fast. We would not be able to keep, as it were, the ping pong ball suspended for very long. Part of that, too, a lot of the discussion about John Taylor Gatto and how the modern education system, at least according to his analysis and allegations, is really teaching confusion, indifference, emotional dependency, intellectual dependency, a whole bunch of incoherence, a whole bunch of terrible lessons. And I just keep going back to that in my mind whenever I just glance at any of the major media that we have and how inadequate they are to the task of trying to share information with all of us so that we can really understand context and have a coherent view and not feel emotionally and intellectually dependent. So all these things run together. The paramedic method is great. I recommend the book, Revising Prose. I'll link to it in the show notes. Definitely recommend grabbing a copy. The paramedic method is fun to just take apart sentences and realize how often you could take a bit of writing and often truly like introduce new ideas, say more, convey more information or color or style while simultaneously reducing the word count considerably. It works. It truly works. And it's amazing to witness the effect. It just clears up writing and is much better communication. And without question, I think Lanham's statement here that there's such an opportunity to save time, just to save so much time through better writing and sort of more succinct writing. So we'll revisit it. I also like kind of maybe so far in these dispatches, first time just sort of talking about a simple framework here, the paramedic method. I hope to do a lot more of that kind of stuff over time. The sort of OODA loop, or even like in marketing, jobs to be done and the classic sort of 3 C's, 4 P's, STP, all that kind of stuff. Lean. There's all these great frameworks and there's all these great sort of truisms and stuff. So hear about writing and other times too, like in operations, my operations professor would say that if you can't draw it, you don't understand it. And say, Edward Tufte, the only way to see it is to see it. All of his brilliant work on information design. Fascinating stuff. So it's cool to get those on the table. I hope y'all are having your weeks off to a great start and talk to you tomorrow. Thanks.